You're listening to Band Sounds with Phil Corbett.
The term Bitcoin is a play on words. Obviously, it's a combination of coin, meaning money, and bit, meaning computers. But what most people don't realize is that Bitcoin is taken from an old mining phrase, like actual mining in the ground. After the California Gold Rush, silver was discovered in Nevada. Miners rushed back the way they came, but didn't know which new town to go to. So the towns in Nevada, who needed those people to work their mines, would hire a town promoter to travel around to mining camps and convince people that their town was the next big thing. And the phrase these promoters would use to drum up hype: Bitcoin. As in, ladies and gentlemen, we officially Bitcoin in Virginia City. You ought to get there as quick as possible if you want to bite some coin yourself. And that's where modern-day Bitcoin gets its name. In 1862, a promoter showed up in the boomtown of Virginia City and planted a story in the newspaper. They claimed they had bitten coin in a new city in central Nevada called Earn. That's E-R-N. Though the silver in Virginia City made some people rich, a lot of people could not afford a place to live. So they read this in the newspaper, pulled up literal stakes because they were living in tents, and rode horses to the center of Nevada. And when they got there, they were in a desert without food. So they killed and ate the horses they rode in on. They had faith in this new town, and value was in faith. Nobody had really bitten coin in Earn, Nevada. A miner found a little silver and the land was cheap, so him and his friends hyped it up. And they knew the more people they could lure to the town, the richer they'd get. The town was built on a lie. But the lie worked. The city of Earn flourished, and the population, then the town services, grew exponentially. They built schools, bars, churches, and soon even founded their own newspaper, the Reese River Revell. And the Reese River Revell would become world famous for three things: journalistic humor, making stuff up, and the Sazerac Lying Club. The Sazerac Lying Club started as a group of old men that would meet in a bar called the Sazerac and lie to each other. It was an unnamed, unorganized organization, just old miners telling stories in the bar. But on a slow news day, the editor of the Revell, Fred H. Hart, decided to mess with the old men. He picked out one of the liars, a guy named Washington, and printed an article in the paper claiming that Washington had been elected the first president of what Hart called the Sazerac Lying Club. There had never been a vote. Nobody agreed to this. But there it was, in the paper. Just like Mark Twain's newspaper in Virginia City, tall tales and exaggeration were a part of the DNA of the Revell. In a small desert town, there were very slow news days, so a writer would just fill the pages with whatever they wanted. Plus, the Revel spent its first couple of years promoting empty mines, so it was no stranger to blowing things out of proportion. Neighboring newspapers would routinely call the Revel's facts into question. From the archives, the Gold Hill News wrote, "A gentleman just in from the Reese River informs us that the ledges there, which are called a foot thick, are generally from 1 to 2 inches. What a lying age we live in." And a paper from California wrote, "To bite coin is a phrase fitting of gold, not silver. For gold is soft enough to bend under teeth. However, silver is harder, and a bite of a silver coin does not reveal its truth." So that, by the way, is where the phrase biting coin comes from in the first place. People literally biting coins to test if they're real gold. Silver is harder, though, so it doesn't work that way. The Sazerac Lion Club began to organize. Even though they were initially upset with Fred H. Hart for making the whole thing up, the club adopted his name and Washington became the actual president. What started as a lie in the newspaper slowly became reality. The club would meet at night and sit around the wood stove telling lies. And Fred H. Hart would write down the best ones and print them in his newspaper. The column was so fantastical that papers across the world loved it. They started reprinting the column, and sometimes they would explain these stories were false, but sometimes they would not. One popular story is this one. A liar named Uncle John was riding up the highway south of town and saw a low, dark cloud blocking the road. At first, he thought it was a freak storm, which is not uncommon in the high desert. But as he got closer, he realized it was not a storm, but it was birds. A lot of birds, thousands and thousands of birds. He tried to ride through, but when the horses on his wagon hit the wall of birds, it was as if they ran into a brick wall. And the wall stretched across the entire valley. So he turned back and headed up to get blasting dynamite from a friend. They figured if they could tunnel through the earth, they could tunnel through the birds. But after a long ride back to the road, telling his friend about the incredible sight he was about to see, there was not a single bird in the whole valley. That story was reprinted a few weeks later in Germany, but it had a new ending. In the German version, the man returned with his friend and the birds were still there. They put his mining dynamite in, and they blasted a hole. They tunneled right through the bird cloud, and it worked. This is how the story is now remembered. The man blasted a tunnel through the birds. Though the lies were usually freeform, the Sazerac Lion Club did have rules. Among these rules was that lies would not be malicious or self-serving, and they would only amuse or elevate without harm. Most of the stories were victimless, and usually about mining or fishing or hard travel, but some of the stories were not harmless. Dozens of them would include a protagonist who would trick, steal from, or brag about intimidating the non-white residents of the town. The native tribes and Chinese immigrants were the target of nasty smear campaigns. It's impossible to pretend that public opinion didn't shape the very real exclusion laws and violent policies towards both groups. Lies were used to drive up the value of the town, and lies were used to devalue people in it. What I'd like to tell you is that there was a lie so fantastic that it killed the town. A lie big enough to undo all of the others. Something like... It's around midnight, and Uncle John leans in over the wood stove. "Do you know this place is doomed?" he says, eyes darting to every face in the room.
"How'd you know?"
somebody mutters.
"Well," John says, "I was down in the mine and I heard a rustling at the end of the shaft. I should be the only one in there, so I set my lantern down, crouched up against the wall, thinking whoever it was would assume I ran. But as the rustling got louder, it didn't sound human. So I jumped up towards the lantern, pointed my gun into the darkness. Right then, a face stepped into the flickering light. It was a man so gnarled, his skin was rougher than a bristlecone pine, and his limbs more crooked. The only thing blacker than his teeth were his eyes. And his fingernails were so long that they sounded like claws when they dragged through the dirt."
John shifts in his seat, the others leaning deep into the story.
"And here's what he says. He says, 'Your mountains done ran dry. Get on up to Bannock, Montana, where they bit coin last week.' And he coughed up a fit that lasted 5 minutes. And as he's coughing, I think, this guy must be a lost promoter. Maybe he got turned around, came in here for shelter. But when he gets a breath, he says, 'Nah, I know what you're thinking. And I'm not a promoter. I am the Toyabe Mole Man, and I can tell when a mine's running dry from 12 miles away, and there ain't no coin for 12 miles in any direction from where we're standing right now.' I shook his grimy hand, walked back into town, and right here into my seat in the Sazerac. So who wants to go to Bannock?"
Everybody in the bar believes every word and grabs what they can, and the town is deserted by daybreak. But it wasn't a lie that undid the town. It was the cold, hard truth. The city could live on hype and lies, but only for so long. Eventually, the mining operations that were promised to be bigger than the Comstock weren't, and the shipping companies that promised to deliver silver never did. Today, Urn is practically a ghost town. The only thing that seems to be operational 24 hours a day is a large warehouse outside of town. One resident told me it was a secret Tesla site, and an old-timer on the main street snapped his suspenders and rocked up on his toes, saying, "Bitcoin, my boy, it's the blockchain." But one business that was frequently mentioned in the Revel is still standing. The International Hotel. And out front, it has three large banners that say, "Make America Great Again." It is no longer a hotel, but a bar and restaurant and some of its Yelp reviews are as follows.
This place sucks Trump's ass. 1 star. Owner is a racist baby. 1 star. It's in the middle of nowhere. Lower your standards. 5 stars. We endured a pro-Trump rant from the owner. He's a Serbian immigrant and is still mad at Clinton for helping the Muslims in Serbia. 2 stars. Give America diarrhea again. 1 star.
Most of the townspeople I talked to aren't happy that these signs represent them, but nobody seems bothered enough to do much about it. The hotel is the loudest, brightest thing in town, and it desperately wants to return to a time when lies kept its rooms full. A few years into the Sazerac Lion Club, they were offered a book deal. They agreed to hand over the rights to their stories. But they stipulated that all future lies would be private. The Reese River Revell stopped printing their columns. In fact, the club publicly disappeared. It is unknown whether the Sazerac Lion Club dried up that night, if they simply went underground for a while and then dried up, or if there are still some old miners in that bar today, sitting around the wood stove, telling lies. Van Sounds is produced by M. Zhang and me, Phil Corbett. If you like the show, subscribe, and if you're already subscribed, leave a review on the iTunes Store, grab a t-shirt, or share an episode with a friend. This episode was very inspired by one of my favorite shows called Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. He is working on a series right now called False Alarm that I highly recommend. You can find this show on PRX, iTunes, Bandcamp, Twitter, and at our minimal website, vansounds.org. The music in this episode was our opening song, Roots Connective, by Eclipton San. A super long song written by me and the artist formerly known as T. Hayes, a track from Blue Orange, a version of Kiss Me, Honey, Kiss Me, used as the exit music on Buster Blues' When the Silver's Gone, Symmetry by Eclipton San, and finally this song, White Fur by Dear Nora. I will link this and all of the artists below. So if you like something, buy music from them. Well, thanks for listening, and keep moving. So just a quick note, I was reading the paper this morning before publishing this episode, and on the last page it has an article that says the Revell sounds again. So I'm going to go try to figure out what that's about, and I will get back to you.